The Disappointing Friend podcast is produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Eastern Kulin Nations. We pay respect to elders past and present. We're grateful to share in the act of oral storytelling and community care that has existed within these cultures, on these lands, for thousands of years. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Hi, everyone. One more time. Hi, everyone. It's Fatuma here, one half of the Disappointing Friend podcast co-host. I am a mother. I am one of the other halves of Collected Closets. I am a wife. I am a sister. I am a daughter-in-law. I'm a great daughter-in-law.
I'm your other co-host, Juliette Miranda Rowe. Yeah, this week I'm frazzled. Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Scattered.
I feel like my head's been in a blender. So here we are on our second episode, which I am actually really excited because I feel like this is the episode that frames all of the other episodes. I think, you know, when you think about how did you become the friend that you are? And can I just do a little bit of a throwback to last week's episode? So, talk about fail. So, I was like, oh my God, I've learnt lots this time. And then I went to drinks with some new friends, mum friends, like Arlo's school friends. And I bombed.
What do you mean?
I bombed hardcore.
Maybe that's them.
No. It was totally me. I get really stressed with new people. And I also get stressed in, like, just knowing what to say. And so then I just am like, and also I'm obsessed with my child. But it's like my cloak as well. So all I did was talk about Arlo and their mums, and they're just like, girl, we did not come here for this.
Yeah, right. Wait, was this after we had just recorded that day?
Yeah, and I thought I was evolved. I was like, look at me. I'm going to ask lots of questions. I'm going to do this and that. And then I just panicked, and I was like, I love my child. He's amazing.
Maybe it was because you'd spent the morning talking about yourself, though, and you were done.
No, I don't tell myself a lot. I don't know. It was like I was thinking, like, oh my God, I'm excited for this year because I'm doing this podcast. Still lots to learn, guys.
Life does humble you. Yeah, 100%.
Cool. Oh, that was me on Friday night. Shout out to the ladies. Time is of the essence today. I have really thought about friendships and what I'm willing to do and what I'm not willing to do, but how I got there. Like, I'm definitely not going to, like, I'm not very good at, like, dressing up at fancy dress parties and really coming through for people because I'm too self-conscious. I'm not very good at, like, when people give me carnations, really being happy about them.
Do you mean flowers?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was like, do people give carnations? I thought that was, like, what you wear on a wrist in American movies for,
like,
formal.
Oh, yeah, like a But so I have been thinking about it a lot and just been thinking about, okay, how did I end up here? So I want to fast forward.
Or rewind? Wait, because for context, within this episode, we're going to discuss first friends, our first memories of friendship, and particularly, I guess, the ways in which we might be holding on to those stories or narratives even well into middle age, I guess.
Yeah, like, but also how did you become the way you are? And usually it's about the first friendship or the first something, whether it's a boyfriend or your parents, that really take you on this journey. And really what you're doing now is, well, what I'm doing now, what we're doing now, is correcting some of the habits that we picked up, that we developed. And whether it's because we were hurt or we were ghosted or mistreated or however, they kind of, like, set you up for who you are as an adult, sadly, but really true.
Well, they wire your brain.
Yeah, they do wire your brain. So it's been really, really interesting because I really had a lot to unpack and I've been thinking about it all week. It's been a bit emotional and some of it not. And some of it I just haven't really told a lot of people. So this is the first time. So I want to Fast forward. Am I fast forwarding or rewinding? Fast
You're rewinding, forward. Babe. Rewind. You're going backwards in time.
God, thank God.
It's I know it's been a while, like from probably since you used a VHS or a cassette. So it's rewind. It's backwards. We're going backwards in time.
Okay. So I want to rewind back to when I was about 4 years old.
Okay.
And oh no, let's just say five. So my parents had moved to a new suburb. My parents were newly divorced, living with my mum, and literally we were the first black family in that town or like
this
suburb.
Is this here?
Yeah, this is in Australia. Like this is like 1990, like yeah. So early. So I'm going into grade prep. And before then it was kind of like, you know, I kind of had a few friends at kinder, not really. My parents' friends were really our friends, like cousins and stuff like yeah. that. They're really the ones and they set you up. So I go into the school in a new suburb, new house, new everything. And we go to school. We just walk to school. I don't even know if my mum had a car back then. We walked to school. And I was excited, I think. My mum pressed my hair. So excited to go. The colours were, like, not very complimentary for my skin tone, to be honest. But get to school. And everyone hates us.
Whoa.
It was so awful. So, like, people wouldn't want to sit next to me because I was brown. People wouldn't want to hold my hand because I was brown. People would look and stare at me. And I want to, like, Australia in the 90s or late 80s is a very different place. Yeah. When I say we were, like, the early black family, we weren't the only black family for, like one suburb. We were the only black family for, like, the whole little region.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm talking about five or six suburbs over.
Yeah.
And so, and it was a time where, like, when we'd go out, people would stop us every day. Like, just going to Coles, you'd get stopped like three or four times and people would ask you questions. And it was a mixture of like microaggression and them just wanting to know. And like, it's so interesting because right now in my normal life, I don't know how many times I would stop someone to ask them anything about themselves.
No, it was really normalized in the 90s.
It was. Yeah. So people would be like, can we touch your hair? Just general things that were so like weird. And I look at my son now and he just never, ever gets up. No one's ever touching him in any kind of way. Occasionally his hair. But like, even now I'm like, tell them to stop. They wash their hands. Back then you just didn't do it. So we go into school and nobody wants to sit with me. And it made me develop into a really high anxiety. I hated school. Like, I hated it. I think I was also quite dyslexic. So the combination of the being different and everyone hating me being at the school, which is what I felt. So whether it happened or not, but I felt it and my sisters felt it. So it wasn't just me.
I can imagine that it was happening.
Yeah.
I mean, even being vaguely ethnic in Australia in the 90s was... Yeah, Australia still is a very racist country in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but in the 90s,
it was
unhinged.
So I'd go to school and I would hate it. And I'd struggle to get through the day. Like, by 12 o'clock, I'm telling the teacher that I'm about to die and my mum needs to pick me up. And that happened every day from break prep. I don't know if I did a full day, a couple, but I'd be counting the minutes because I hated it so much. My teachers tried their best, but I just hated it. And that continued into grade one. And I remember there was this one cute little Indian girl. Well, shout out to Sabrina. Her last name. And I was so excited. So that was the only Indian family. So imagine, like, that's how white the school was. That's how white the suburb was. But Sabrina. And I was like, yes, finally, I've got some friends. She was only staying one term.
Oh, no.
So for that term, I could go to school for most days. And then to make it worse, I also had this weird eye condition where my eyes would swell up, but it wasn't because I couldn't see. It was just because of the element. So I was like actually allergic to Australia for a bit. So it was literally the worst combination. So I had to wear these crazy glasses, but it had nothing to do with my sight. It had all to do with just like
protective goggles.
Protective goggles.
Oh my God.
So I was like brown, teeny tiny.
Yeah.
With goggle eyes, allergic to the element.
And wait, to backtrack, when you say you think you were pretty dyslexic, were you ever actually diagnosed with that?
Or back in those days, I never did about it. But what I did know is this. My brother was 2 years younger than me, and I couldn't spell Fatuma.
Yeah.
And he was coming in strong with Jadone. Like, that is a long, there's like 10 letters in there. And he was coming in strong and knew everything. Anyway, so that takes me to grade two. Again, struggling through. And then finally I made a friend and I was so excited. And it was weird because she was white, but in our minds we had so much in common. So I was one of four, she was one of four. She was her
mum was as well.
Yeah, really. There you go. her mum was divorced. My mum was divorced. She was white, but she identified of coming from like a Scandinavian country.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it was really strong in how she identified herself.
Yeah. So and for context to the people who might not have grown up in Australia in the '90s, Australia is such an Anglosphere space in, and by that I mean English speaking. It's really predominantly like British.
That's true.
That even Scandinavian people, because it is, while it is a white culture, if coming from like a non-English speaking, non-British background can even be seen as somewhat exotic here. And
yeah, even if you're a Greek or Italian back in the day, like that was exactly. Yeah. So like, and I like weirdly didn't see that she was white. I was like, yeah, you are definitely blah, blah.
Was she an immigrant?
She spoke it. Yeah, okay. But she really identified. So what I think was really amazing about her family or her mum and her dad was like that culture was really strong for her.
Yeah.
So she identified and like everything she did was about that kind of culture. Anyway. She was like, hey, girl, let's hang out. And when I say to you that it was so special to me.
Like she chose you.
It was like she chose me. It was just like we had lots in common. It felt like finally, for like 2 years, I hated school. I was about to fail grade one. That's how much I hated school. Mm. Like the teachers were like, Fatima is never at school for a full day because she's always calling in sick, basically. Aww. And also, because she's never at school, she can't, like, she doesn't know the basics of it.
Literally. Did they do anything to try and understand, like, why?
They did. I think they identified. I was so lucky because my mum was so, like, you know, into it. She was like, oh, yeah, I understand that she's going through a bit. I can see. She was, like, definitely very empathetic towards it. And the school was like, she can go to grade two. But we need to like brush up on it. And I was so worried because my brother's 2 years younger and they were thinking about putting him up a grade.
Oh
so which
God.
Would mean that we'd be in the same year level.
Yeah.
All right. So then I had to go to Kumon. That's how bad, like that's how behind I was.
I mean, you know.
Listen.
No shame in Kumon.
Some of my best friends in adult life all went to Kumon. That's one thing. Yeah. I was like, what? You're a Kumon kid?
High achievers, surely.
Also, but back then you went to Kumon for two reasons. Because you were really, really smart. Or really, really, really not. And I've got friends that we all started on Struggle Street trying to get us in there. Anyway, so then Hisha comes along with like, Fatima's my girl, and my whole world changed. Grade five is really my best year ever.
Wait, it was that long to get to like a solid friendship?
No. Okay. Like grade two, straight away. My parents are immigrants, so there's not a lot of like, you know, there's not a lot of like you can do stuff together. But my mum was like feeling her mum, obviously two single women going through it, raising children, four kids each. Literally my mum was like, get it. We love that. So then all the things that maybe my older sisters took a bit more time, my mum was like, yes, you could hang out with her. You can sleep over.
Wait, where are you in the...
At the time I was like kind of sharing the middle.
But are you second youngest?
Now I'm straight in the middle because my mum had a baby after.
Oh my God.
But before then I was like... sharing the role of I was second youngest in that.
Oh my God, yeah. I'm second youngest as well.
Oh, there you go. Okay. And then I got into the middle, which is really my spot, which is where I should really have been. Anyway, so then it was really, really, really tough. So then here I am holding on to this friendship. It's not that I didn't have, after then I realized that lots more people really wanted to be my friend. And I started to understand different things. But in that space, I was like, oh my God, this girl understands me. And we kind of ruled for then. Like, I was good for so many years just knowing that she was on my side.
Mm.
We became friends with other people. We hung out with her older boys. We loved it.
Mm.
And then we got to, like, we got to the end of primary school. And I look at that time of my life so, so fondly because it was the first time I felt people saw me.
Yeah.
They didn't see my colour. They saw me as Fatima
and
Blah Blah's best friend. We had best friend charms. We'd like hung out on the weekends. Like I got to meet her family. And the funny thing is her family was so similar to my family. Like the values that we're talking about, the reasons, but like this one time we both couldn't go to school camp because our parents couldn't afford it.
Mm.
And it was like the best case. Yeah. Imagine if my mum just couldn't afford it. It was like, no, both of our single mums. And we wore that as a badge. Like, sorry, we didn't have enough money.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And it's so good when you have that like
power
level,
numbers.
That power number, someone that just sees you and understands you. So here we go in, and then this is where it kind of starts to kind of change a bit. I, being a black woman, get into like more black culture. And you have to remember that it was a very different time around this time as well, because back in the day, it was African, but it was African American culture, which is different from African culture.
Yeah.
So African culture, well, not so cool yet, but African American culture, it's true. So like for me, you know, people wearing MC Hammer pants at school, I was like, yes, that is me, which is not really like African American culture. I mean, some of the prints are very African inspired, so let's not get too crazy. But it was such a big part of how then I started to see myself as the world was seeing way more currency in African American culture. If you think about it now, people probably take that for granted. They made these moments that made the world look at everyone that looked like us, brown, as like, maybe you guys are acceptable. Maybe you're interesting. Mm. And so that kind of, it was that wave and that movement of it. Anyway, so we both get into like end of primary school. We're not going to the same primary schools just because we lived
in different.
The same
high schools?
The high schools, yep. Because we just lived really different areas. My sisters were already in high school. We were doing that and she was just doing something different. And she started to become a bit more grungy. And listen, I still bought like a pair of DCs. My first concert was Blink 182. Like I tried my best. But Will Smith was my passion. But so we wrote letters to each other every single day.
Wow.
Oh, at the start. I mean, it got less and less.
I love that as like a practice. Given me a flashback, actually.
Yeah.
I forgot I did that with someone, writing letters to each other.
Yeah, because back in the day, there was no emails, no text messages. So the way that you kind of like communicated was letters were strong. Like we...
First of all, I want to take it back to when you say she got into grunge and you were into Will Smith.
Yeah.
Because one, I think people forget just how segregated the 90s even still were in terms of genres and culture.
100%.
Because it really was like, oh, I'm into rock and roll or I'm into grunge.
You could only be into
pop,
one.
Or I'm into R&B and hip hop. Yeah. There wasn't really a mixing of genres as much.
Yeah.
Just so ridiculous.
And also it was the era where you could only have one best friend. I mean, like maybe that still exists, but definitely just one best friend was there. So it was a very interesting time. So then here I was loving my Will Smith. I was definitely getting jiggy with it. If you know, you know.
Oh my God, you dog.
So jealous. I did. TLC, you know, and I shared a room with my sister. So a lot of the time we'd be pulling our funds together to buy like a magazine that we could get the posters for.
Mm, and a classic.
Also, my parents weren't really into like any kind of grunge, or we call it like white music.
Yeah, like, oh, right.
Fatuma, what is going on? But I did try my best. I bought like Billabong, Quicksilver, and I would think that because I loved her so much, I did like the stuff. I definitely was like, yeah, we're homegirls here. Turns out that as the years went by, it just became less and less. And I remember this one time, this is what I recollect. I can only speak for myself. She was like, hey, girl. Maybe not in those words. She's like, I don't think we have that much in common anymore.
Did she say this to you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She was like, nah, I think I'm good. I'm going to a new school. I just feel like we just don't have that much in common. You know, all good though. And I was heartbroken.
Was this a phone call? Was this a letter? Was this a...
It was an interaction, I think. It was like the last couple of times I saw her. And at the time, no doubt, was the shit.
Huge.
So huge. Everyone wanted to be... Gwen Stefani, even me, brown girl. So I had just bought the album, or like the single with like five hits or something, $5.95. Or that was only my budget. Bought it, and her and I have this interaction. And I know that.
And also, there would have just been other things going on.
There was a lot. Like she called me less. I didn't get as much frequent letters. It was just like a slow breakup.
Do we know what her star sign was?
Yes, because I still know her birthday, Virgo, which is so funny because...
You're a Pisces.
But also, all of my relationships there, like, I had Arlo early.
Oh, and he's a Virgo.
Just to make sure he was a Virgo.
Wow.
I've been obsessed with Virgos ever since.
No, well, because Virgos... Do you know that Virgos are the sister sign to Pisces?
No idea.
Oh, you didn't know that.
No idea.
Okay, well, so, yeah, Virgos and Pisces are essentially, like, two sides of the same coin. So they operate in very different ways, but it's like night and day. Like there are similarities, and they can both be really they're both quite caring, just in really different ways. So like a Pisces is a water sign, obviously, so it's a lot more, it's going to be more attuned to those emotional sort of needs. It's going to do things like, oh, I'm going to try and get into the things that my friend is into because I want to try and maintain these things. I want to write these beautiful romantic love letters. I want to do these things. Virgo is an earth sign and it can be really practical in a lot of ways. Oh, so when you say, she's like, hey, I just don't think we're that into it. We're into the same things anymore. In some ways, I'm like, that was her probably... She probably thought that was a really caring thing to do.
Mm.
She probably didn't think that that was an approach that was maybe cold or anything. Because, Virgos can be very systematic and they can be perceived as being cold and also really critical.
Yeah.
Because they can often be the ones that are pointing out, they can be critiquing people.
Yeah.
And if people aren't ready to be critiqued, they're not going to necessarily interpret that as like a caring move. But a Virgo is like, no, I care about you and that's why I'm giving you feedback.
There you go. Well, it's just funny because if you think about it, like I met her when I was like, let's say 8. Mm. And that was just purely based on like us being drawn by each other, having this similar kind of story. And really, it was just always aligned with the stars.
I want to disclose that I'm not an astrologer. Yeah. We will have an astrologer on at some point because I think like personally, it's obviously a keen interest of mine. And I do find that fascinating that, you're... Your first bestie was a Virgo and that you're now obsessed with Virgos.
Literally, when I said I was induced because I wanted my son to be a Virgo, and it was like the worst move of my life. Like I was like, my God, why did I do this? But he's a Virgo and I felt very happy when he
came out.
I was like, we're all good.
I like that her being a Virgo and her breaking your heart in this way, so to speak, didn't affect your opinion of Virgos. You were still like...
No, because I valued the friendship so much. And so when I say to you it was a heartbreak and it was like, what I bought that No Doubt Don't Speak and I listened to that on repeat like every day. I cried to it. I was heartbroken. Aww. Did she say anything that was not true? It's true. Like we were going in different
directions.
But because she meant so much to me, when I mean she meant so much to me, I was like... such in a bad space when she met me. And I think for a child to be in that space, I don't know if like back then parents didn't really like understand. I was broken as a child. I was just like, oh my God, I'm in this space where people just don't like me because of what I look like. They're not really giving me a chance. And I have to be here for 6 or 7 hours a day.
For the next like 6 years.
Yeah. And just be tortured basically. Yeah. And then she comes along like my a real bestie. And also the hard thing about it was, and we'll talk about this in a couple of other episodes, that so much of white culture and friendships, like all what you see and you depict is all on like television. So here I am watching the Babysitter's Club being like, oh my God, I want to look after someone's baby. And everyone's like, no, you're brown.
Yeah,
you're not looking after my baby. Or, you know what I mean? Like so much of those friendships, so much of that life that you look at on TV, when you don't look like that, is just so hard because there's nothing around you that like tells you you're okay. Like now if I think about it, like my son, I co-parent with YouTube, has just so many examples of where he could just go online and there'll be that representation of what he wants. He's into rock and roll. There are kids that listen to rock and roll.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have to like really be in his room and think about it. He can just type in keywords on Google and then Google will then just sync his algorithm and just throw this information to him. So he can really just like have the world that he thinks he is in his mind. So for me, that just wasn't it. So I really, really, really struggled through that time. So her saying to me, which she was valid at the time to say it because we didn't have all that much in common anymore.
Yeah.
No, was just heartbreaking. But because we didn't really unpack anything, I think it kind of like was that thing for me where it was like, just all got too hard. We just never really spoke. And when I say we didn't really speak, I don't think we ever really spoke ever again.
Yeah, wow.
But it was this constant relationship that I'd thought about years and years and years and years later. I remember maybe like 7 years later, I would have been like 21. I was living on Oxford Street in Collingwood. Yes, I was trendy back then with an ex-boyfriend of mine. And I bumped into her at that McDonald's And I was so excited. Like, I could tell she wasn't. Like, it was like 12 midnight. Everyone was a little, like, drunk. But I was like, this is my in.
Yeah.
Again. This is my in. And she was like, no, girl, we're not getting back together ever.
If you literally hadn't bumped into each other in all of those years, that is kind of kismet. You know, that is wild to be in the same random McDonald's
yes.
on a Friday night or whatever, even if you are both 21 and it's a hipster suburb, and yeah, maybe I guess it's not that wild, but
yeah, it wasn't glamorous back then, but
I
yes.
think it makes sense. It makes sense for you to still be thinking about that relationship, because I have friends that work in early childhood education, so we have lots of conversations about childhood development and like that age, like 8. There's like a thing in psychology that essentially, like, the first 7 years of life is really where the pathways in your brain are being wired.
Yeah.
So how people are wired in those first 7 years are going to essentially, like, determine how they react to things throughout
yeah,
the rest of their lives.
That makes sense.
And so for you to meet her at this point where you've sort of, like, things are starting to kind of be wired in yourself, but you're also just before puberty. Like, imagine if you hadn't met her and you'd spent the rest of primary school feeling that isolated
oh my
and
God.
Alienated, it could have literally like your entire course of your life could have been
and I remember
different.
And it's so interesting that you say that, because obviously like both of our parents didn't have a lot of money, and I remember there was like a rumor about how like we didn't have a lot of money, and which is like, think about it.
Yeah,
my
no,
mom's like a single, like, but it's also like, of course, like a single mom yeah. with 4 kids or 5 kids. She knew it hurt my feelings and was like, put a stop to it.
Oh, wow. I love
that. And I think like I didn't get invited to like a shopping day, because everyone was like, oh, well, we don't know if Fatima could come.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, she's coming. And when I found out about her, the shopping date, which is also really awkward and cruel, I felt really okay with it, because I knew that she was on my side.
Yeah.
I did feel, I mean, like, it still was pretty hurt by the whole situation, but it just was really different. When you have someone that understands you and you can go through life, like, knowing that you'll be fine because this person has your back,
yeah.
it's a very different kind of headspace to
it's
be.
It's security.
It is security. Mm. Also, when you know someone's going to be the one to speak up for you, like, yeah. no, that's what's going to happen, and watch out. And I did that. So it was like a very protector. And if I think about some of the friendships that I've had, like even moving forward as an adult, that's kind of a role that I've always been like, no, she's my friend. I've got to protect her.
Yeah.
And even when it's been not the case I should be doing it.
Yeah. Like maybe you shouldn't be protecting some of their behaviors.
Or maybe it's like my job here isn't to do that. Like because it started off as like watching her do it to me, I felt like I need to do it. That was it. Like you and your friends, you protect, you don't want them to be hurt, all of yeah. that. That was my role. Like I was the fixer because she was fixing all my problems. And it's interesting because it's like led me through a bit of a dark kind of patch. Anyway, back to this story. So then all these years I've been thinking about her, and obviously we're still Facebook friends. Her and I have stayed in contact, and so like once a year I probably get like have too many martinis and I go home and I just go on Facebook and I like go through her life, which is
oh my God.
A little bit crazy but also nice. And then occasionally, I don't do this very often, I'll send her like a random message like, hey, congratulations on the baby or
oh, yeah.
whatever, like whatever's happening, yeah, I'll yeah. put my 2 cents worth in. And like, so that's carried on for like 10 years.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
And when I've seen her go through a few hard moments on Facebook, I'll then like DM her.
Yeah.
But I can feel like it's not like, let's have coffee. That's just never happened. But secretly my real heart has been wanting that. I've been wanting for her to be like, hey, I've been watching you too, but she probably hasn't.
Do you think she hasn't, or do you think she's just someone that isn't going to initiate those things?
Well, we know that she hasn't because, so when we started to do this podcast, and Juliet and I were thinking about it and what we wanted to talk about in it, we're like, oh, first friendships really do set you up. So I was like, oh my God, this is the perfect opportunity for me to make contact with her, like a real weirdo. I was like, yes, I'll do it. I'm excited. In my mind, I was like, we'll have coffee or a cocktail. We'll reminisce about the time at camping and the sleepovers, the day that my mum made this spaghetti bolognese that she loved. And we'll talk about Daniel Johns. I'll talk about, I might, like, put on Will Smith. Like, you know, what's that Men in Black, I imagine, like, even, like, practicing the dances in my head.
Oh, my God.
Let's have... I got them revealing so much. Anyway, so I DM her, private DM her, like, telling her, like, hey, I'm putting this podcast together. I've had a bit of a tumultuous year with some of my friendships. And one of the most significant friendships that I've ever had in my life is with you. So I write her this, like, this DM. And I'm expecting the invite. Like, yeah, girl. Instead, she was like, oh my God, no. I barely remember our friendship. And I don't want to go through it because there's a lot of personal stuff and I respect that. But yeah, she was like, no, actually, I don't really want to get back into that time in my life. I was shook.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I have been like thinking about this woman for 30 years. And she was like, no. It was like, at the start, shocking because obviously and maybe she didn't understand how special the friendship was to me. Like, I think that she's a white woman that fitted into most of her life with a few, like, obviously not perfect. I was, like, struggling. And I don't think I've acknowledged how much I struggled until I became an adult in that round that time. But not just, like, the school. There was a lot of little things that were happening in my life. So I think that she doesn't understand, like, how much it was, like, wow, thank God someone saw me at that point.
Yeah.
So because of that, I've obviously waded too much of the friendship into this one zone. And she's probably been like, yeah, friends come and go, which is 100% fine. But when I first read the message, I was devo. I was like, what?
But also, the story that you're coming up with reveals more about you as well. Because you're the one that's going, oh, maybe our relationship meant more to me than it did to her.
Oh, no, she didn't necessarily say that. No, she didn't say that at all. 100%. No, I get that. But I think for me in that, like, it was just so shocking because, like I said, I've been focusing on, like, thinking about her for 30 years and being like, oh, my God, this relationship is so special. And then finding out that, like, through 100%, like, I looked at it and I was like, yeah, you're 100% in your right to be able to feel that way because she wasn't being nasty. She was actually really lovely, like so nice. Here I am trying to like get her on my podcast.
Yeah, trying to exploit the relationship for content.
For content. She's like, no, bitch, not doing that. And then like after I reached out initially, her and I went back and forth and she was like, actually, like this is a special moment. And so we had weirdly this moment where like we were unpacking stuff just through text, and I think that's all it needed to be.
Yeah.
And it was really, really special. It was so unexpected. In my mind, I thought it was gonna be something totally different, but really ended in a special way. And I at the end was like, oh no, girl, I totally understand. And I hope maybe like when we're like 60 or 70, we end up doing grabbing that martini and like reminiscing, but also like the middle part of who I am. And yes, a lot of the stuff that I've carried on and lots of the relationship baggage that I've brought to some of my friendships is like, you know, avoid, don't have big conversations, like try and protect and be the person that tells your friends what to do because you've got the voice of reason. Not sure, even though you have no expertise on any of that.
Yeah.
But I don't regret that because I feel like I have been such a like their friend for the friends that have been going through stuff because I've had that example of like someone being like, no, you're my friend.
Yeah.
I ride for you.
Yeah.
No one's saying shit.
Yeah.
We both don't have any money. Like, I'm so thankful. Like, I think that I was so lucky to have a really good, great friend to show me. Like, yes, I got dumped really badly. I've probably dumped lots of people badly in the same way. Like, we're done now and gone. I could think of like three really good girlfriends or friends that were really like I loved and adored that I probably ended the relationship in that way. Like I remember this one distinct friend, her and I went to like uni together, loved her, like great. But I remember being like, okay, I'm like, this relationship has served its purpose and now I'm doing this. And so done. She didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. It was just that because of what I had historically learned that like it was literally just like it's run its course. And I remember, lots of those relationships running its course like that. And it's crazy. Like I think about it now. I'm like, oh my God, I've like gone on Instagram and her Facebook and stuff. And it feels like we have gone in very different directions. But God, she was amazing. Like we had so much fun together. Like, yeah. She was a ride or die. Not sure why I let that relationship go. But I just remember thinking, like, okay, I finished university now and I'm going to do big things. Yeah. Gotta go.
Toodaloo. That is really interesting because I think that is kind of the really key difference between you and I, because I had only actually had the first person say, like, we're done. Like, I've never had that in my entire life, someone really clear cut be like, this is the end of the friendship, until last year. It was shocking, but it was also really liberating in that I would have spent the rest of my life trying to get that person to have like an updated perception of me. The same way you're like, maybe when we're 60 we'll have a martini. My way with them is I'm like, I think that we personally do need a separation to eventually at some point perhaps come back and them actually be able to see me as an adult person. Because that was for me part of an issue in our relationship, and then I was like, we've been friends for so long and there are parts of me that you never understood. Yeah. And as we've gotten older, you get further from understanding, and it just felt more and more like, I'm like, oh wow, this person can't see me for who I am. They're seeing me for like memories and for some nostalgia, and like you just get stuck into kind of certain habits, and it was just becoming more and more like
like an obligation. Well, the funny thing is,
I don't want to say obligation, no, but yeah, more and more like a performance.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, I think today, I think my sister must have sent it, this YouTube clip of this this podcast. I don't know what it is, but this woman was saying about how a lot of your first friendships are about convenience. Because about, in this really interesting way. Convenience and
you're
location.
You're
in the same, and you are doing the same things. You're in the same friendship. And I think about that in some of these scenarios is not that they're less meaningful. I don't think that that's true. I think that once you get pulled out of your kind of like world that's been pushed together and collided together, and then it becomes this thing about familiarity. It becomes about the time that you've spent together. You've banked it in your friendship bank. You've got 10, 6 years together. You don't want to walk away from there. But really, fundamentally, you are kind of changing into different people. And you, the person is still holding you accountable for shit that you did when you were 21. They still see you as a child. Like, they still see you as the person you are. And you probably see them.
Yeah.
And a lot of those friendships that I've had that are similar to that, where, like, people have done some pretty shitty things, like, dumb things. Like, we've been 20.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of over-drinking. There's been a lot of, like, just, like, your brain's not developed. You can be quite bitchy. So people are saying shit that they don't actually mean. And now that I'm 40, I just would never operate in a friendship like I did in my 20s. There's a lot of like carnage, I would say.
Yeah.
And it's like all about you guys learning how the world is, but through it, you're kind of throwing each other out of the bus in the most loving way. Like, you're not doing it to be nasty, but you just do it because you're trying to find your own feet.
I think some people are. I think we shouldn't underestimate that sometimes we are doing things to be nasty. And personally, I think that you can very much grow. Some of my closest friends are in completely different scenarios to what I'm in, where like we have literally grown apart. But for me, I think if you're committed to, this is why I think conflict is so important in all relationships, because I think conflict builds intimacy. So I think if you, I actually think all relationships come down to a choice. It's like a choosing to stay committed to something and choosing to stay curious about who someone is. And like, obviously, there are some people where it's like, oh, wow, yeah, we just really can't talk to each other anymore. But, like, I have people who, like I said, are completely different lives. We have completely different perspectives of the world. But, like, we still are curious about each other and I still learn things from them because we have a level of, like, commitment. And I think in the relationships I've had that have fallen away, it hasn't necessarily been because we've grown apart. It has been because either one of us has refused on some level to engage in conflict. And that's why I think there is futures if people grow in a way where they can then address the conflicts.
I reckon this is a good time for us to
To end,
yeah. Because I feel like we could get into conflict all the time.
Every
like
episode that is about like conflict.
A one. And we kind of, yeah. And we want to thank everyone for listening.
Thank you.
I want to thank my first best friend. I'm sure she knows who she is. And it's interesting. I feel like it's a really nice way to unpack your life. You know what I mean? Like really reflecting sometimes and seeing how far you've come. Turns out last Friday night, haven't come very far.
No, I think that's that. Even just hearing about that though.
That's so funny. I literally woke up the next morning and be like,
It is worth further unpacking how those early ideas of being excluded might, you might still be hanging on to some of those ideas.
I feel like I'm always trying to like show how good I am, whether the person needs to know or not. Like it is my number one thing. Yeah. I'm always like, so through that, sorry to keep going, one last thing, through that new drinks, I think I was doing that. I was like, you go, I am really good enough.
Yeah.
Oh my God, my amazing son's really good enough. And that's what I end up doing instead of just being like, why do you care? Like, I don't know. And these girls are so lovely too. So I don't think they needed me to do that.
No.
But I needed to do it for myself.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's just say.
That's relatable.
Oh my God, Julia, it's my favorite time actually. It's time for listener questions. I love this time because I really like to hear back from people. Like, I feel like you and I just do a lot of talking. And, you know, we're not therapists, but I love to give advice. It's my thing. What's the first question?
Okay, our first question. What happens when your best friend's partner dislikes you and doesn't think you're good enough? He has been quite disparaging about my character. My bestie and I have been friends for over 15 years. And after a drunken night, her partner revealed to me that he didn't think I was good enough to be friends with her. He didn't think I was doing enough with my life, even though I have a successful career and life. I'm unsure how we can move forward knowing that he secretly doesn't like me. This is interesting because this to me doesn't necessarily sound like he doesn't like you. It sounds like he's being really judgmental and disrespectful.
Which means that he doesn't like her though. Think about it. Imagine if someone thought that you weren't doing enough with your life. Like what are you at? I want to know that you've like got a cure for cancer, please.
Yeah. Yeah. But also, okay, so I don't drink anymore. Drunk people say a lot of shit. And I'm not saying that when people say things when they're drunk that it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I think that you have to contextualize it.
Remember that. He's not like he let it slip that night, but obviously the person's been feeling like he hasn't really liked her. So, yes, like, you know, the alcohol's probably just loosened the lips a little. And he probably wouldn't have said those exact words. But she's not like, it's not like, it's, he's not, you know, she kind of knows that he doesn't really like her, I guess.
Yeah. Look, this is like, this is interesting because it's like, it's all kind of like snobbery. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's multiple... There's like multiple levels here because one, I would definitely have a conversation. I'm always pro having conversations with your friends. One, I would work out what I actually feel about it because what's this guy? Do you know what I mean? Who is this man? Do I care if he thinks I'm not doing anything with my life? Because I'll admit, I worked in a call center all throughout my 20s. So I had people who were my friends say disparaging things to me while they were drunk about me still working in a call center. And I'm like, how about you mind your own business, because like we're on different paths.
But this is the thing about it though, she's got a successful career. So it's different when you're like in a gateway. Yes, in your early 20s, we're all working at cafes and all that. It's like, you know, when you know someone doesn't really like you for no good reason. Like if this, like she's got a successful career here. We're not talking about a woman trying to find her way through life.
Yeah.
She's like got it done and the person's like, I don't think you're good enough. And I think that is an awful kind of thing to have in you. You know what I mean? Like knowing that person feels that way.
I'm not saying I didn't have that didn't give me a chip on my shoulder all throughout my 20s, having people be condescending to me about staying in a supposed like a dead end job for so long. And also I grew up poor. So I've had people say condescending things to me my entire life. And so I think because of that, when people say stuff to me, in general, my rule is like whatever people are saying is more of a reflection of them than it is of me. So that's why I say work out how you actually feel about it. Reassure myself that like I'm successful. My life is the way that I want it to be.
But also I think that it says more about this. That if you're so worried like how someone else's friend shows up for them in that friendship and how they feel fulfilled is very, very like it nourishes them. How is it your friend's career going to derail?
Actually, no, I know. I read a book recently which had it quoted, but I don't remember where it's quoted from. But essentially, when a new romantic partnership establishes itself, it's like estimated that you lose two platonic friends because that person that you now are in a relationship with, you have like
well, there's this extra time and commitments that you put into that relationship. I've experienced this so many times with friends that have really utilized me for my availability and like emotional support, or even just like fun and like hangout support while they're single. Yeah. And then the minute they get a partner, they can't return my text. They don't initiate anything. Yeah. And then who have literally gaslit me when I've tried to express like discomfort about that.
Yeah.
Well, not gaslit. I think there's an overlit of the word gaslit, but we'd have people invalidate my perspective and feelings, and also like just not really be very reflective. And then quite often actually have people make out as if our friendships were like, yeah, weren't really what they were.
Like now I'm 40. A recent girlfriend of mine that I love and adore last year started going out with this new man. Mm. And I like, in my 20s, I did not have the maturity enough for her to just be like hanging out with him. In my 30s now, well, late 30s now, I'm 40. But like, I literally said to her, girl, I will see you in 3 months. After 3 months, I need a phone call. Like, you're now 3 months to be in your honeymoon phase. Love it. If you don't call, I'm not even going to like check you on it. I'm going to say nothing because I love this for you. But 3 months on the dot, I want a phone call and I want like a bit more of like a follow up.
I cannot even imagine, because like me, if a man is still in my house, I am writing to my group chat. I am like, blah, blah is here again. Blah, 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 blah. Like I am, that's this my issue. That's why I can't be in a relationship, because like I'm just like, I'm a storyteller. And I'm like, a lot of the time I'm like, I think I was doing this for the group chat rather than like my own contentment. But this one is like the new partner is critiquing the pre-established friend. So it's like, it's like almost like a power struggle thing or something.
Which is also a weird one. It's a hard one, yeah, because I'd be like, if my boyfriend did not like my best friend, would I go out with him? I probably would.
But my thing is just like, this just all needs to be conversations. Mm. Like, you need to tell someone that like, hey, what you said to me the other night was really disrespectful and I know you were drunk, but like that was out of line. And to the friend, like, what your boyfriend said to me was really disrespectful.
Yeah, keep him away, please.
Like, and I don't even think it needs to be a keep him away, but it needs to be like addressed.
Yeah.
And like, that's the thing. It's like, it just address it, like actually establish. Because if you let it slide now, it is going to become a thing where 5 years down the line, you've got someone still saying little snarky things about you. This is actually, it doesn't matter actually. I was thinking about like my parents and like old friends of theirs and the way that they talk about each other's old friends. And me growing up around that, I was always like, I never want to let my partner separate me from my friends.
And this is the thing though. Mm. And I think that's hard for me because I like I said to you, I think that as well for my friends, especially in my 20s, very different. Like now that I've been married, in my 20s, I would not go out with a guy that was going to cause this much like and plant things in my ear. Like I've definitely had like issues with my friends, and I think that my partner has always been very Switzerland. And if anything, he's encouraged me. He's like, hey girl, actually, you've said, you know what, you can be a handful, or, well, why do you need to tell her what
you're holding you
feel?
Accountable.
He's always holding me accountable and always encouraging, whether my friends have been drainers or like the ultimate girlfriend. He's always been like, hey, you're not perfect. Like, oh my God, you've been friends with this girl for so long, fix it, or, you know, encouraging. So this feels very, very foreign to me. I just can't imagine marrying a guy that was disparaging. Like, I can see how you get lost in the start of a relationship. I don't get it when he's making snarky comments or being rude to her. That I have to be like, what's his character?
I'm too close to the mic. Anyway, sorry.
No, but like what I'm trying to say is I get
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah, you're
start,
right. This man, this
later
disparaging.
On, disparaging comments about my homegirl is where I have a problem. They're the people that love you. Yeah. Like they've got all this history together. And I think that the ultimate goal is like that your friends find the ultimate one and they marry and they live these lives. And it's hard to hear that maybe you aren't the one for him, or like maybe that there's something about you. I think it's human nature to kind of feel that way. I think that there is a thing here though where you've got it as a person because you know this person. This woman knows this other woman, yeah? Mm. And she knows that, like, is it worth it? Like, who should be having the conversation here? Should the real person that should be having the conversation is the girlfriend with her husband or the people in the relationship? Because how has she not said to her husband, hey, this girl's been in my circle forever. She's been a ride or die. She is amazing.
I hate, like, the term ride or die. Oh, sorry.
Well, triggered. Sorry. But, like, you know, like, check yourself. What's wrong with you? Like, that should be, I need, like, I'm not having the conversation with your husband or your boyfriend. Mm. I'm having a conversation with you to be like.
But that's why I think this is different, though, because this isn't friend to girlfriend. This is partner to friend. So this is actually kind of dangerous as well, because if we think about within, obviously, like, I don't know the situation, yeah. But, like, it is literally, like, a thing within domestic violence situations that, like, men will, well, I shouldn't say men, like, that violent partners will separate the partner from their networks, from their community, from their family, from their close friends. So, like, I'm not saying that's what's going on here, but it's like, people will try and, like, control who you're close to because they want them to be, like, the closest thing in their lives. I'm not saying that that's what's going on here. I'm just saying, like, in this kind of instant, that's why I think it is worth having a bigger conversation. And also, like, we don't know the full context, right? Here, I'm going to reread it again. He didn't think I was doing enough with my life, even though I have a successful career in life. Like, is that him maybe not even understanding, like, the breadth of your career
but
and your life
I
as
mean.
Well?
I'm not having this. This is what I've worked out. This is my.
I still think you say someone that they're being disrespectful.
No, I'm saying this. I've actually changed my mind. This is not my drama. Mm. I'm telling you, my best friend, what your husband said to me and saying it's not okay.
Yeah.
You are having this conversation with me. I'm not having a conversation with a grown man telling him how much I am worth and how good
you
I am
don't
as
need
a person.
To tell him how much you're
no.
worth.
No, 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 but I shouldn't have to say that. My friend should be the one to check her man. You check your man. You know what? Your man said this to me. If this was said by my man to you, you would hate that. You need to sort it out. He doesn't need to me.
I think they all need to have chats.
He doesn't need to like me, but he doesn't need to be, like, spewing his hate, drunk or not. I don't need to hear it. Other, you and I can coexist. You and I can have a relationship without him. I will see him on Christmas Eve or whatever, like, that kind of distant. But I'm not sitting there having, like, because I reckon that's actually, like, even worse, having to be like, hey, what you said. Of course he knows. He should be calling me.
I wouldn't be saying, like, hey, I wouldn't be doing it in that way. I would be doing it in, like, a firm way. I would have said it at the night.
But you know when sometimes
you're being
people,
disrespectful.
100%. But you know sometimes when someone says something that's really, like, we've all had it. When someone said something to you where you have not been prepared, like, you and then you go home and you're like, how did I not say this and that?
Of
course. How have I not responded? So sometimes
I feel it says the staircase.
Is it?
It's like you think of the right thing to say as you're walking up or down the staircase as you leave.
Yeah. Like, because you're so shocked. I remember once I went to a party and someone was like, you're not as interesting as I thought you were.
I know.
And I was like,
I hate that someone said that to you.
No, three times it happened to me over my life. And I remember the first time I literally said, oh, I'm sorry that you feel that way. Because I was so shocked. Just move away. Just, like, not hang out. Who cares? To say that to someone, I literally just was so taken back by it that I had no comeback. And then it took me, like, 3 weeks to be like, what do you say? You know what I mean? So I'm thinking that, like, in this situation when that person had said that to her, she's probably just, like, bewildered by it. Like, it's her friend's partner. That, like, she's always felt that way as well. Like, oh, God, I don't think this guy likes me. And then saying these, like, quite vicious words is just, like, actually, you don't know what to say.
I'm not denying that it's rude. I'm just, somebody that's had lots of people say rude things to me, I just would have sassed them back in the moment. Mm. I'm not saying I wouldn't have a conversation with my best friend. I don't, it would depend what my relate, like, no. It would depend on what type of thing I had, I guess, with him.
I feel like that's way more, I think that it's not my drama, it's his drama. He's the one that doesn't think I'm doing enough. Like,
no, but I wouldn't want someone to ever talk to me that way. And so I would want it to be known. I would talk to my friend and be like, this was really disrespectful.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
Yeah.
But I would also, regardless of whether he's with my friend or not, he's just a man in the world.
Yeah.
You don't talk to me that way, I'm telling you.
You're way, like, more ballsy than me. I'm like, I'm sorry that you feel that way.
I think this even,
and I go back to you in 3 weeks with a response.
Well, no, I'm not saying I'm very slow sometimes as well, particularly as I've gotten older and I, like, my thing is with like drunk people is even if I had told them at the night, because I've done this before, we've been like, hey, you're being disrespectful.
They can't remember.
And then they don't remember.
I'm the
and
queen
it's useless.
Of not remembering.
Right? So that's why I'm like, and I'd also like, if you happened? Try and bring it up after,
oh
they might get drunk shame, but they almost also yeah. might get like full drunk denial. And it's like, okay, well, this is like a waste of my time.
Oh, my God. This just put me back to how much drama I had in my 20s. My
yeah.
God. Thank God those times. Thank God. You know, in your 20s, you have all this kind of drama. I'm hoping this person is like 20-something. Because like,
I'm imagining they're in their 30s, to be honest. They've been friends for 15 years. I feel like they're at least 30.
Yeah, 100%.
I will also say with my friends, because of the way that my friends taught me, it made me... I would get this weird thing where it would make me resent their partners unnecessarily. And then sometimes it would make me go, my instinct was to then hate their partner. And then sometimes I would overcorrect where I would go and be like, no, you shouldn't hate their partner. You should make an effort to really get to know their partner because then you'll be in their lives more.
Yeah.
The thing is with this is because those initial friends had also already invalidated my own experience, they were not aware that I was going to so much effort.
Yeah.
To like make friends with their partner.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like exhausting. But for them, they're just like, this is just, you're just being normal. This is all a normal experience for you. And it's like, no, I'm trying so hard not to hate your boyfriend right now.
Well, that's what it probably is. He probably looks at this girl. She's probably a bad bitch. And he's like, God, she is amazing. And imagine if she starts to hold me accountable for some of the stuff.
Maybe.
That I do. Maybe my life isn't as great. And like my partner will want more. And the more she hangs out with her, she'll find out. Anyway, that is our advice. And those are our little notes.
This isn't like even said, ask for advice. This is what happens. And I think we discussed what happens.
And also, we're not therapists, so do what you will with it.
But definitely have some adult conversations.
Definitely. Well, thank you for that listener question. If you want to write us any more listener questions, please send it to thedisappointingfriendpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear more from you guys and try and like help you with some of your dilemmas.
Let's be friends. Subscribe to the Disappointing Friend podcast. Follow us at the Disappointing Friend podcast on Instagram and TikTok. DM us a voice recording with all your friendship, tribulations and triumphs or just thoughts. Or email us at thedisappointingfriendpodcast@gmail.com. We're obviously not psychiatrists or psychologists or therapists in any capacity, but we have years and years and years of experience. Disappointing friends and being disappointed by friends. Until next time, the disappointing friend has left the chat.
So I'm like 3 months, I'm like, I would be on the phone to my friend all the time being like, listen to what happened here. I'm so in love. Blah, 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 blah. Like I would just be like telling people. I'd be telling strangers on the street. Like if I was dating someone for 3 months and I was that loved up, I'm like, I would have a podcast about that.